Okay, we're back with my esteemed co-host, Mike Ingram, who's a strategist at BGC Partners, and somebody who's even more esteemed, if that's possible. Dave Harris, who's CEO at the Invertrust Consultancy.
Thank you, Zach.
It says, it does actually say consultant here.
But you know.
I know.
You're the main man. I'm the main man.
Right, yeah. So you've been away frantically playing at the golf courses.
Yes, yeah, Portugal for a couple of weeks.
How was that?
Climate change ruined it. Climate change. I've had to wear a polo shirt and shorts.
Good Lord.
I'm
just picturing.
Oh, I'm so pleased to be back.
Okay, all right. Well, that sounds a bit weird.
Dripping with insincerity every syllable.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I was just thinking whilst I was away. The question probably I've been asked more over the last 5 years from various investors is, how do I compensate for this low interest rate environment and more recently dividend cuts that are starting to come in? I mean, we saw BHP Billiton slash their dividend last week, 75% cut, I think it was, wasn't it? You've seen Rio Tinto, who have also slashed their progressive dividend policy. Not all doom and gloom, because in jumps Lloyds Bank with a 1.5p dividend plus a special dividend as well. But with interest rates at a current low, many people, particularly those perhaps reaching retirement or in retirement, needing income from their investments. And it's not always just the top interest rate they need, but they need progressive increases. Yeah. And then my memory got jogged on Sunday because Ali Hussein wrote a very good article in the Sunday Times about those companies and how, or the big companies who've increased their dividend and over how many years. And I thought that maybe that's a good starting point. So if you looked in the UK, 49-year unbroken record of increasing dividends, City of London Investment Trust, mainly a FTSE 100 investor, and yields about 4%. So there's probably a nice, sensible starting point. 36-year unbroken record, Halma, which is a technology group. Now, actually, they're starting dividends only about 1.5%, but there's been a 20% increase in share price over the last 12 months. 19 years, Sage, software designer. 17 years, Diageo, drinks giant. If you're looking for something that gives you a sensible income now and an increase in income, maybe that's a good starting point. Now, if you go over the water to the USA, because it gets even better, 59 years Procter & Gamble of an unbroken record of increase in dividends.
Before we were born.
Not before I was born, unfortunately.
I don't believe.
No. 53 years Coca-Cola. And if you, the price that you'd have bought Coca-Cola back then, you're getting 100% yield plus on your initial purchase price.
It is fantastic. It's very reassuring as well. The only problem I have, which is I said to David Buick the other day, is just that we're in this deflationary environment.
Yep.
We've had that for like the last 5 years, and it's just starting to kick in now that you can't keep raising profits and keep raising dividends. How long? I mean, you know, it looks to me as though you're going to have, you know, that 59-year run broken, the 49-year run broken very soon, unless we get inflation starting to come back.
Well, you certainly, I mean, I'm not saying that 59 is going to turn into 60, but I'd have a better bet at Procter & Gamble increasing their dividend this year.
I'll be buying it now. You see what I mean? That's the sort of the view. But it's just the fundamentals. I mean, the companies that have slashed their dividends, you know, the Barclays and the, you know, yesterday, which was a horror story, and Billiton.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't be doing that unless things were really, you know, tough.
It is tough, and I don't think anybody's trying to underestimate the difficulties.
So you've got to choose the sectors, maybe, that which you know, I mean, let's say the household goods area, the drinks area. Yeah. You've got to choose, you know,
sort of consumer staples.
Finance and mining is not exactly going to be the most robust situation of this type.
But in different conversations that we've had over the past few months, we've said, you know, mining, banking, oil sector, that they're probably sectors that most people would be avoiding. I don't think any of these names here would particularly get in there. I mean, City of London Investment Trust, if it's a FTSE 100 investor, it's probably got one or two within it. But then my guess is that it's got a huge amount of dividend reserves that it could use to either smooth out the dividend or still to maintain.
The other thing is my question to you. It's just like, you know, this is very, as I said, very reassuring. But what, you know, if interest rates are so low and there are a lot of companies out there still maintaining their dividends and very chunky dividends, 4-5% plus. Why is the stock market not at 8,000, 9,000, 10,000? I mean, it just seems, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Well,
people are not playing ball. I mean, my explanation, my cynical explanation is that people just bought the housing market. So all that cash has gone in there rather than to the stock market.
Well, again, I mean, it's probably a conversation for another day, but if you used all conventional means of valuation, you would suggest that the housing market in the UK is about as big a bubble as you could possibly get. Now, the problem with that argument...
It's a one-way bet, whereas the stock market isn't a one-way bet.
Well, it's been a one-way bet for a period of time. And all the time that you keep the supply low by not building new houses, and we've discussed the problems of doing that, then people will be able to put their money in there and they'll see it grow. And there's many, many people who believe that bricks and mortar are better than the stock market.
I mean, that might be that's almost the problem waiting to happen, that if there was some event which really did hurt the stock market for a sustained period, people wouldn't get out because they would think, oh, well, we managed to ride through the financial crisis, we managed to ride through the 80s and 90s. It's never going to go down. They'll be sitting there when it's down.
But this is just another way of invoking the Greenspan put, the Bernanke put, the Yellen put, the Carney put. It's like, well, central banks are always going to bail us out of trouble. But, you know, look at our starting point now.
Yeah. Look, I don't say that any of those arguments that you've put forward aren't valid. And I'm sure that over the next 2-3 years, we'll sit here and we'll chat about various things and we'll change opinions. All I'm saying with this is that if you're somebody who's reaching retirement or in retirement, you need income from the investments that you've got. And some of the better areas to look for income have to be these consumer-based companies, drinks giants, who have this unbroken record of producing you the income that you need. There will be disappointments. I'm sure there will be disappointments. Next time, maybe, when we come on, because there is a theorem about this as well, which was put forward originally by the FT about 20 years ago. It's called the O'Higgins theory, which essentially is that you take the whole of the Dow Jones Index, you choose the 10 highest yielding stocks, and you invest equally in the 5 that have the lowest absolute share price. And you leave it, you do absolutely nothing with that portfolio for 12 months. And if you look at the historical performance of doing that with the Dow Jones, you outperform virtually everything equity-wise. It just about works in the UK, but it worked better with the old FT 30 index than it did with the 100. And you can do it if you haven't got sufficient money to have a portfolio. You can use that theory with one stock, but for some reason you choose the stock with the second lowest absolute share price. Now, don't ask me why. All I'm saying is that we can have all of our wonderful conversations and we're all intellectual and we've got this reason and that reason and this. And somebody comes up with a theory like that and you might throw all of our conversations fully away.
Well, I take it that O'Higgins is your golfing partner.
I wish he was. He'd have made me a lot of money over the years if he had been. No, unfortunately he wasn't, no.
Dave Harris, always a pleasure. A CEO at Invertrust Consultancy. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Zach.